I'm Katie Lauer, and I'd like to share one of my stories with you, Aunt Dot's Scrambled Eggs. It rained all the way to Mississippi that Thanksgiving. It pelted against the windshield of the car, and the sound of it, like a quiet roar, was enough to drown out the radio. Eventually, I gave up on the radio anyway. The rain took all my concentration. I didn't have a cell phone in those years, and I couldn't exit to get to a gas station, so I white-knuckled it to I-65, where the storms began to subside and I could call my parents to let them know I was going to be late getting in. I braced myself for the last couple hours of my drive. The storm had blown itself out. In another half hour, it was over, and the stars came out like diamonds strewn across the sky. I finished the last leg of my trip and pulled into the driveway, got out, and stretched. My parents lived in a colonial-style ranch house surrounded by pine trees and honeysuckle. My sister called it Terra, but she was being sarcastic. My mother was outside running to hug me before I could even grab my suitcase, and then I was in the middle of a cluster hug. I felt uncles and aunts and in-laws, nieces and nephews, all around me, until I had to come up for air. "Welcome home," my father said, and wiped a touch of moisture out of his eyes. As we came nearer to the front door, I could hear a football game blaring out over the television set in the den. Once I was in the house, the tension in my shoulders from the long drive seemed to dissolve. Inside there were cake stands with Lady Baltimore cake, jam cake, a German chocolate cake, and pies from my aunt. A turkey and a ham sat out on the dining room table next to a platter of fried chicken. I reached for a drumstick, but my sister was there in an instant. "Don't pick," she said. "I'll make you a plate." She looked at me and laughed, that mix of giggle and full-throated laughter that was so endearing. Daddy sat down in his recliner, a can of beer in his hand. "How was the traffic?" he asked. I sighed and let go of more tension. I was home. My nightmarish journey was over and forgotten. I wanted to sleep late the next morning, but at 8 a.m., I woke up on the lumpy old sofa bed, smelling the aroma of fresh coffee, and I heard a mix of voices, male and female. I jumped out of bed and ran into the kitchen, reluctant to miss anything. "Well, good morning, honey," my mother said, her brown eyes dancing. "I'm glad you're up. They're just fixing to go see the Coonhound Cemetery." "A graveyard for dogs," I said. "Isn't there a nice museum somewhere, someplace with a lunch counter?" Mother always liked for us to do something educational on our visits, but the Coonhound Cemetery was a desperate stretch. She just smiled. "They have the Coon Dog Museum right on the grounds of the cemetery." My uncle turned around to face us. "You've got your foxhounds, your bird dogs, and your coonhounds," he said solemnly. "The coonhound tracks raccoons and trees them. They're fierce creatures, the raccoons, I mean." "Get dressed," Daddy said. "I think we can all fit in one car. We'll get breakfast when we get back. Aunt Dot is frying quail in lard, the way we used to do before everybody got high cholesterol." Even though it was the end of November, the weather was pleasantly warm, and the air smelled clean after the rain. "Have you ever heard a dog tree a raccoon?" my uncle asked. "It's a real hair-raising experience. The dog howls way up in high falsetto, and pretty soon the other ones hear him and join in, until it's like a choir of voices." My uncle lit a cigarette and went on. "It's called giving throat," he said. "Daddy managed to get us across the state line into Alabama with a minimum of cussing, and miraculously we found the dirt turnoff road to the cemetery. Daddy had no sense of direction normally, but now he looked a lot like a picture I saw of President Roosevelt with his hat pulled down and a victorious smile on his face. We parked and went in, and the first thing we saw was a large statue of a coonhound. The dog was black and tan with big ears, and the sign on the statue said, "Tecumseh, a fine dog." Behind the statue was a long, low building, probably kennels. Other marked graves lay under ancient magnolia trees, and a pile of leaves, brown and dried, swirled in the soft wind. We walked aimlessly for a while, reading the obituaries of the dogs. "People spend more money on dogs in this place than they would spend on their wives," Daddy said, snorting a little. Uncle Clarence was still thinking about dogs. "It says here that the pointer is the Cadillac of hounds." "Is that right?" Daddy said, but I knew he was not paying attention. He was over the coon dog cemetery. I was hungry anyway. On our way home, we passed a generic gas station, poor and run down. "Stop here, Daddy," my sister said suddenly. "I've got to get a Coke." Daddy looked around at us and arched his eyebrows. "Look at those men working on that old car over there," he said. It was an old 80s model car, rusted out, with blankets on the seats in place of upholstery. You don't ever want to stop at a place like that, especially not alone. We were silent for a beat. One of the men who had been hidden by the hood of the car straightened up and looked directly at us. His eyes were little and mean. I shuddered. I had almost stopped at just such a place on my trip down. "Mississippi is dangerous," I said. "Well, you need to have a dog," my uncle said, and laughed at himself. Daddy tuned the car radio to a country station. Pretty soon we were rolling along to the music of the pedal steel guitar and a smooth swinging fiddle. Daddy began singing the lead, and Jackie and I each grabbed a harmony part and sang along. "Anytime you're feeling lonesome, anytime you're feeling blue." The harmony was perfect, and we were swinging. We leaned our heads together for the last line. "That's the time I'll come back home to you." "We'd better get back pretty quick," Daddy said. "We've got quail for breakfast and scrambled eggs so light you have to hold them in the skillet," my sister said, laughing. "And that's worth getting up for," she added. My aunts and my mother would be in the kitchen now cooking, every pot and skillet pressed into service. We piled into the kitchen laughing and hungry. Aunt Dot was in charge of the scrambled eggs, and Daddy cut out the biscuits and arranged the freshly killed quail in a black iron skillet. "I swear," Aunt Dot said, "every time I do this, I miss Mother so bad." She paused and looked sad for a minute. "I believe I'm going to have to take a headache pill," she said. "Fred, get me one of my headache pills out of the train case." Uncle Fred took his time getting up. He was bow-legged and solemn-faced, and he looked a little like an adult toddler hurrying towards the bedroom. "God Almighty," she said, watching him go, "Sitting Bull. You'd think I wouldn't have to suffer on Thanksgiving as much as needs to be done. I better take that with milk," she said, when Uncle Fred came back with the pill. "It'll start my ulcer up if I don't. I probably won't be able to eat a bite." Outside, a neighbor had started a bonfire. Inside, the men were pouring whiskey into shot glasses and drinking it down with a toss of their heads. Mother came through, her brow furrowed with disapproval. "Jack," she said, "there's children here." "I'm well aware of that," he said in a tight voice, and tension shot through the air like a bolt of lightning. Nevertheless, he put this whiskey away, and no more shots were poured until evening. Everybody laughed when Daddy mentioned James Simmons. It was the signal that someone was going to tell a story, and James Simmons would be the star. He was a boy who lived somewhere in the woods around Henry County, Tennessee, where my family was from. It was so far back that nobody knew exactly where they lived, Daddy said. But every now and then you'd see them walking out of the woods, single file, like Indians. First Will walking with a rifle over his arm, then Blanche, then James, bringing up the rear. Daddy paused every now and then. James would do a little dance step and squall. I swear it would raise the hair on the back of your head. We sat in a circle around the living room listening, and the light made a halo around our heads. Whatever ties bound us, they pulled tighter at holidays. Whatever mysterious force drew us to each other on these occasions, it was so compelling, it was hopeless to fight it. It was blood. It had to be the blood that made us follow one another like neurotic lemmings, marching into the sea for this food, these stories, these small unchanging rituals, and the music. The songs my family sang wrapped themselves around my heart and soaked into my skin till I was as high and light as Aunt Dot's scrambled eggs. For Around Cincinnati, I'm Katie Lauer.
The muddy waters of the Ohio. Gentle waves are lapping at my shoes. That river seems to ruin every other place I choose. Wade right in, wash away my blues. To be homeward bound. That river runs inside my head like memories I can't lose, pulling me back to you and the Ohio River blues. Pulling me back to you and the Ohio River blues.